John chapter 1. We've bounced around quite a bit between John and Mark. Generally speaking, we'll be working through Mark, but there's just something about the beginning of the year between Christmas and Epiphany that we keep pulling John in. And so we do it again. We're back in John. We tend to think of John chapter 1 with that prologue and the Word. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. But that's not all there is to John chapter 1. If you just kind of look through your Bibles real quick, you just sort of flip a page, you can see that, you know, John chapter 1's not small. It's not just those opening paragraphs. So we have in John chapter 1 also John the Baptist. We have in John chapter 1 also the baptism of Christ. And now we have the calling of the disciples. So that's actually quite a bit that's a lot of ground that's covered in a single chapter, especially a first chapter, but that's where we find ourselves. So we are kind of closing up John chapter 1. We've got verses 43 through 51. It's not very long, and it will take us to the end of the chapter. Would somebody be willing to read that, please? So starting at 43.
The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee, and he found Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Or Tallahassee. Philip said to him, Come and see." Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" And Jesus answered, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." Nathanael answered him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You shall see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man."
Okay. All right, so we are, we're kind of there at the beginning of his public ministry, and he is calling some disciples. We don't get the very first couple of disciples that he calls, because that's actually just a little higher up. Andrew and Andrew's brother, Simon Peter. Those guys come to Jesus in the preceding verses that we don't get. But right after those two, Jesus goes to Galilee, and he finds first who?
Philip.
Okay? So he tells Philip, we're just being real simple and real surfacey right now. He tells Philip, "Follow me." And Philip says, "Why?" And no. And no, he didn't do anything. What does Philip do? We don't know, but apparently he follows him because by the next day, Philip is so convinced, he goes to talk to Nathanael. So there's obviously stuff that's skipped over. And we'll get that a couple of times in this little passage, that not everything is recounted here. Is the only thing that Jesus said to Philip, "Follow me," and like just the way that he said it was so compelling that Philip had to do it? Does it say anything? No. So we can guess, we can make stuff up, we can have our pie speculation. I would suggest maybe a couple of things. The first of which is maybe there's a lot more to it. That, you know, Jesus said a lot more, but what was recorded was simply "follow me." John will mention at the end of his gospel, look, Jesus did so many things. I didn't write about everything. As a matter of fact, all the books in the world couldn't contain everything that he did. What I've written for this purpose that you might believe. So maybe a lot of stuff happened, but John just kind of decided the only thing that was important was that he told Philip, follow me, and he did. That kind of makes sense. The other thing I would throw out as at least a possibility is Philip has just met Jesus, and he's looked him face to face, and Jesus has looked at him eye to eye and said, follow me. And I may be wondering if that is pretty compelling all by itself. Quite possibly. Just a thought. But we don't know, but whatever happens, that connection is sufficient so that Philip wants to start spreading the word. So ostensibly, Philip follows Jesus, but then the next day we've got other things going on. Where is Philip from?
Bethsaida.
And that is also where Andrew and Peter are from, who have also become disciples in the verses that we didn't get to. And so Philip finds Nathanael. And Philip wants to encourage Nathanael to follow Jesus just like he's following Jesus. So how does he convince Nathanael? What does he say to Nathanael? He didn't just say, hey, follow him. He says something to try to get, you know, maybe it's less convincing to have somebody other than Jesus to say it. I don't know. But he gives more this time. What does he say to Nathanael to try to get him to follow Christ?
That's who Moses and the prophets wrote about.
Okay. So these are all Jews, all of them, and the Jews waiting for a Messiah, Jews waiting for a deliverer, Jews waiting for a redeemer, Jews who knew the Old Testament very well, and both the prophets and the Book of Law point to God's intervening and establishing an eternal kingdom. Having an anointed one, a Messiah, and so this is all kind of, you know, stuff that we know about, stuff that we are expecting, we're waiting for, we're hoping for, and Philip says, yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy. All the Old Testament is pointing to this guy, and he actually names him. What does he say?
He says he's from Nazareth.
Yeah.
First he says that he's who the prophets have been writing about.
Right.
But then he says he's from Nazareth.
Okay. What's the whole thing that he says when he identifies who the Old Testament has been pointing to?
Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph.
Okay, so let's look at that for a second. Nazareth is where they settle. When Mary and Joseph come back from Egypt, they settle in Nazareth, and that's kind of where a life is built. So if somebody were to ask you, where are you from? Most of us have multiple ways we could respond, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's one way to respond? Where are you from? You bump into someone, let's say you're on vacation, you're across the country.
Give them your state.
Where are you from?
State or country.
Okay, state or country.
Where you're currently living.
I'm from Lakeland.
Where you were born.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it sort of depends on the context of who's asking. Okay, if you're across the country and you bump into someone.
You'd probably say Lakeland.
And they say, well, where are you from? You would probably say where you're currently living, right? But if we were all kind of, like just we're sitting around right now, we're in Sunday school, and I say, hey, Nancy, where are you from? And if you say Lakeland, I'm going to say, no, where are you from? And what might you answer?
Michigan.
Michigan. Okay, so the context has changed our answer because, you know, where we're from, and I mean, some people have, you know, born, raised, lived, died, and, you know, it's always going to be the same answer, but a lot of people, most people probably in the state of Florida have multiple answers to give, and it kind of depends on who's asking. It kind of depends on the circumstances. When I was in seminary up in Tennessee on a mountain, and it would be 20 degrees and there's snow on the ground, and I'm walking around with shorts and sandals on, they would say, "Hey, idiot, where are you from?" and they were sort of expecting me to say, you know, like Alaska, you know, whatever. So where we're from is ostensibly identifying something about us. The people who asked where I was from because I was wearing weather-inappropriate clothing, what were they assuming?
You came from a much colder
climate. A much colder climate, so what they thought was cold, I didn't, well, I mean, which is true, but they were associating that with where I was born and raised or what I'd been exposed to or whatever. What could also be some contextual things about answering where you're from? Somebody might ask you for a particular reason why.
Your voice,
like that accent. That accent. Where is that accent from? What else?
Suntan.
Okay. You know how you look. Like, are you really really pale? Or are you really really tan? Because, you know, if it stands out for some reason, you're not from around here. You must be from a place that's different somehow.
Some words, different words people use. Different
well,
words.
Especially you. Pittsburghers are weird with your little quirky words.
Yuns.
Right, the way you dress or the sports team that you're supporting or, you know, whatever. So where we are from identifies something significant about ourselves, and it could be something somewhat surfacey or it could be something quite deep. And so Philip describes Jesus to Nathanael, and he describes where Jesus is from. Any thoughts about why?
It's better to note something.
Okay.
You know,
that seems to be what Nathanael thinks, that it means something.
But it would mean, it would mean different things to different people.
Okay.
To somebody from Jerusalem, it would be hick from the sticks.
Hick from the sticks, yeah. Right. Any other thoughts? We're definitely in the speculation mode here. But interestingly enough, what's Nathanael's response?
Can anything good come
out of Nazareth? Now, why does he say this? There's, again, this is outside the text, but there's usually two reasons that are given to explain why he says this.
There's nothing there.
So there's what's the point? So basically two. It was either a town of somewhat ill repute, like it's nothing. It's either nothing or it's not so trustworthy, or it's because the Old Testament that you just mentioned. Oh, this I found the one that Moses and the prophets have talked about, except Nazareth is never mentioned. So there's a disconnect there. That's why Nathanael says, "What? Nazareth? Who the heck cares about Nazareth?" There is kind of a backwards bias, whether it's on purpose or accidental, or it's just the way things have been set up. Every Supreme Court justice and nearly every president and major politician comes from or has studied at a certain select group of colleges. They're often referred to by a name. Do you know what that name is? The Ivy League.
Yeah.
Can you name a current Supreme Court justice who has not had an Ivy League education? The answer is no, you can't, because they all have. Now, what if someone was nominated who studied law and taught at Texas A&M, University of Florida, North Carolina. Are those stupid places with dumb people and bad law?
No.
No.
No, they're excellent schools, they've got good strong law schools, and someone could be a brilliant legal scholar. But if you try to nominate someone who studied at Texas A&M, what are people going to say?
He's
a man. Texas A&M? What good can come out of Texas A&M? So that's kind of where we are here. We are expecting the best of the best of the best. And for us, that means you had to go to Harvard or Yale or Columbia, or you had to go to Princeton. Maybe you could go to Stanford, but that's kind of it. As opposed to all the other places, which are also very good and very important, and blah, blah, blah. So Nazareth sticks out to Nathaniel, and it's kind of a mystery why Philip uses that. We found the one that the Old Testament points to, Jesus of Texas A&M, and it just doesn't fit. Like, you almost threw that in and it throws me off. He could have just said Jesus, but he throws in Nazareth, and Nathaniel's confused.
Wouldn't they be more apt to expect somebody from one of the old Jewish theological lines?
An old Jewish theological line, or a prophetically significant place. There are messianic prophecies that point to particular places. What's one of them?
Well, Nazareth.
Nazareth is kind of a nowheresville. Bethlehem. The city of David. You know, Bethlehem will be named specifically by Isaiah. Now, where's Jesus from? Well, he's from Nazareth. That's where he's working and as a carpenter and grew up and blah, blah, blah. Where was he born?
Bethlehem.
Now, you didn't know. You know, maybe these guys don't know that. Or that's certainly not where he was, you know, kind of formed as a grown-up or whatever. But if Nathaniel is waiting for a prophetic connection, it's there, but it's not mentioned in this reference. Mm-hmm. This is also an interesting one. What else does he say to identify Jesus? He's from Nazareth and he's the son of Joseph. Why would he say that?
Because Joseph was a direct descendant of David.
Okay. That is, it's conceivable.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody know that? I'm not so sure. Maybe, but you are introducing someone to a stranger. Is Joseph an important guy in his day and age?
No.
Does he have an important job? What does he do?
He's a carpenter.
He's a carpenter. Is he alive right now?
No.
Well, we don't know, but the speculation is he's not, because he's not mentioned again. And Mary seems to traipse around with these disciples, and it seems like maybe Joseph is already dead. Again, this is outside of the Bible. We have to kind of look for holy tradition and stuff like that. But to identify Jesus as from Nazareth and the son of Joseph is super confusing. And we don't know why. Interestingly enough, this passage, as weird as it is, you know, I need you to meet this guy. Oh, he's the son of Fred. You know, Fred.
Yeah, Fred.
Right. And he went to Texas A&M. Oh, that changes everything. Well, again, he's identified two things that don't seem to have any importance at all. But in the context of, you've got to meet this guy. He's the son of this dead carpenter that you've never heard of. And he comes from a backwater that nobody cares about. The interesting thing about this is, scripturally, you know, looking at the scriptures, not just reading them, but at the scriptures as far as their reliability is concerned, it's little details like this. That if this was made up, if these are a bunch of guys saying, oh, we're gonna invent a religion, we're gonna invent a Messiah, and we are going to, you know, make it really compelling because we want a lot of people to follow us. This is not the stuff you write.
But with the Jewish religion, does they have tribes?
And that's true.
And they use their tribe.
That's right. But he never says he is from the tribe of Judah. He never says he is from the line of David. He identifies an earthly father who, technically, Jesus has no biological connection to. It's just sort of a funny, weird, quirky kind of, oh, you got to come meet this guy. It's almost like reasons not to meet him. And if they were making this up, they were trying to just create something as interesting, as compelling about Jesus as possible, they would not have described him in this way. They might have said, he is from the tribe of Judah and he is from the line of David. Oh, well, the Messiah is going to be from the tribe of Judah and the line of David. That I'm interested. He was born in Bethlehem, just like Isaiah prophet. Ooh, this is really getting juicy. But instead, what does Philip know? He's been around Jesus for a very short period of time, and what does he know? He knows that he's from Nazareth, and he knows that his son is this guy Joseph. And that's what he gives. Or his father, Jesus' father.
Could it also be possible that somewhere along the line Nathaniel knew somebody from Nazareth?
It could be. It could be. You know, it's conceivable that there is something about this that would really strike Nathaniel that we don't really know about. And we can, you know, speculate, but there's no idea to know. Remember how we started this off with, imagine you're across the country and somebody says where you're from?
Yeah.
Literally. This is not a figurative story, but when I was 16 years old and we did this big family trip with some relatives in the West, we went to Yellowstone, and at Old Faithful, we bumped into our neighbors. And not directly neighbor, they're two houses down from us in Orlando, Florida, at Yellowstone in July, on a random day,
yeah,
in a random crowd.
It happens.
You know, funny, but you know stuff happens. And, hey, where are you from? Oh, you're two houses down from you.
Right.
You know, who knew? This is one of those things that could be pointed to as, in its oddity, it actually points to its reliability. If it was made up, it would be far more interesting and compelling than this. But the fact that it seems very simple and almost unimportant seems to allow it to ring more true. But regardless, the response of Nathaniel is, what the heck? How does Philip respond to that?
Come and see.
And that seems to be the simplest thing. There's no theological argument here. There is no, well, he's also, you know, oh, okay, son of Joseph didn't impress you. Did you? He's also the, or he also did. There's, you know, he doesn't come up with anything more interesting than that. He just says, come and see. And I will say, as an evangelistic tool and technique, people simply reading the Bible and encountering Jesus is far more effective and compelling than anything we can typically think to say. When I have had opportunities to speak with, you know, non-Christians about, well, the, you know, truth of the Bible or truth of faith or religion, come and see. And there's some stuff that I can tell you and we can talk about it. I can try to answer questions. But ultimately, faith comes from meeting him.
Great men can come from any place.
And that is also the case. Nathaniel does, and we have this very interesting interaction between Jesus and Nathaniel. How does Jesus greet Nathaniel?
Behold, an Israelite in whom there is no God.
Which is a weird hello. Okay. An Israelite who doesn't lie, who doesn't deceive, who doesn't cheat or any of that kind of stuff. And Nathanael's response to that is,
how do you know me?
Yeah. Like, how the heck do you know? And how do you know me? And Jesus' response is,
saw you
in the fig tree. Okay, saw you in the fig tree. There's been a lot of thought about this interaction. A lot of people have written about it with trying to explain it. And I think explanations are interesting, and I think explanations are kind of fun, and there's some points to be had from them. But ultimately, all we have is all we have. And we will run out of room if we push this too far. Here's an interesting one. That Nathanael, under the fig tree, took a stand for God and told the truth when it would have been easier and less dangerous for him to lie. And so this entire interaction is connecting Nathanael with Jesus by saying, oh, an Israelite in whom there is no guile, and I saw you under the fig tree. In Nathanael's mind, under the fig tree, this moment happened, and I could have lied. I wanted to lie. It would have been easy to lie, but I didn't. But only God would know that. Would that explain this whole interaction? Yeah, maybe. Is that what happened? I don't know. So anyway, that's kind of where we get from. This is a very mysterious passage for who knows why. You know, sometimes theology is very deep and mysterious. This is not really theological. We still have much to work on here, other than there is something so compelling about meeting Christ face to face.
One on one.
It just seems to make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it might not matter what he said.
It seems to make all the difference in the world. So whatever the fig tree reference means, whatever the in whom there is no guile, I've even heard a connection made about, so if you were in the 9 o'clock service, I talked about this last thing that Jesus says, heaven opened, the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. What is that making a reference to? Jacob's ladder. Okay, it's making a reference to Jacob's ladder. Now, in what circumstances did Jacob see that ladder?
As a ladder in the heaven.
Right, but what were the circumstances?
He was struggling with the angel.
No, this was way, way before that.
Really?
Uh-huh.
He was running away.
He was running away.
What had he done to his brother?
And what did he do to his brother?
He lied.
He deceived. In that Israelite, there was a lot of guile. As a matter of fact, Jacob's name will be transformed to Israel. So I've heard about how this is actually a super deep connection to say that in Nathanael there's an Israelite in whom there is no guile. In Israel, who is Jacob, there was a lot of guile. And because of that guile, because of that lying and cheating and stealing, he sees Jacob's ladder as he runs away. I am Jacob's ladder who connects heaven and earth. You know, your head sort of wants to explode at that point. Is all that, I don't know. This is an interesting, but frankly, a weird and mysterious passage. But if there is something concrete to take from it, what can we take?
Well, the meeting Jesus, one-on-one.
Meeting Jesus. I think that's what it is. Ultimately, everything else is very interesting, and there may be still truths to explore, things to find out, or us praying and ruminating about this might give us something to really consider that's significant. But ultimately, what Philip does is what our job is. Not to argue people into heaven, but to say, why don't you just come and meet Jesus? And when they come and meet Jesus, their interaction is going to be different than Nathanael's. It will be unique to them, but maybe the end result will be the same. You meet Jesus face to face, and something powerful and profound might just happen, for Christ himself is Jacob's ladder who connects heaven and earth.
Isn't the fact that, you know, translation of the Bible sometimes loses its meaning, maybe under the fig tree, has some significant meaning other than...
I've heard that it's like it's possibly an idiom that the people then would have recognized.
Right.
And I've heard people write about, it was definitely an idiom and it meant blah, blah, blah. But then people disagree about if it's an idiom or not and what the idiom means. And we kind of wind up back to what we have is what we have.
Well, it was summer. Well, the dicks wouldn't have been, the leaves wouldn't have been out if it hadn't been summer.
I guess, except of course the fig tree we have here produces figs about every 3 months regardless of the weather. So, I don't know. And as soon as we start making it, well, it definitely means this, then I think we're starting to get astray. The mystery of this, I think, is actually sort of interesting. And I think there are some things that can be gained by exploring the mystery. But ultimately, I think the most solid thing, if not the best thing, we can take from this interaction is, come and see. Some questions cannot be answered through argument or logic. You come and meet Jesus. You come and encounter the ladder between heaven and earth. See what happens. Okay? Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks.